Murders, Mysteries, and Meows is a true crime podcast and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to Murders, Mysteries, and Meows. I'm June.
And I'm Chris.
And we have a fun spooky episode for you today. Do you know what happened almost 150 years ago today? 149 years
to the day? No.
The Mary Celeste left town, left the port in New York City.
I see. The Mary Celeste, the ghost ship?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yep, left town with a crew of eight and the captain's wife and their young daughter, and none of them were ever seen alive again. Never seen again, period, actually. They're all alive.
Interesting. So, what exactly made it a ghost ship? I mean...
Well, it was found abandoned. The last log was on November 25th. It was found December 7th or so. And it was in good sailing shape. Not perfect, but it still had food, it still had water, it had no particular damage or any issue with it. There was just no sign of life on it. Everybody was gone.
I see. A classic sailors come upon an abandoned ship.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. You know, I always thought it was called the Marie Celeste.
A lot of people do, because Sir Arthur Conan Doyle of Sherlock Holmes fame wrote a short story calling it the Marie Celeste.
Oh, yeah, that timeline fits right. Yeah.
Yep. So, a lot of people think it's the Marie Celeste, but it's the Mary Celeste.
Gotcha.
A lot of people also thought that it was an actual story, not a fiction short story that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought it was like that it described actually what happened, but it doesn't.
Gotcha. Okay, so how did all this start?
Well, it all started back when the ship was first built and called the Amazon in 1861. It was a brigantine type build.
Okay, what kind of ship is a brigantine? If I remember correctly, that's a two-masted ship.
Yeah, that was about as much as I got from reading it. Two-masted ship.
Ah, okay.
And it talks about specifics of where the sails are, and I got confused and didn't really care.
Okay.
So, because it's not as relevant to the story. It could have been any type of ship.
I mean, not any kind of ship.
Well, I suppose not. But anyway. So, its first trip as the Amazon was eventful. The first captain, McClellan, died of pneumonia, and a guy named Parker took over. However, he collided with fishing equipment near Maine, so the ship then required repairs. And then it sank another ship in the English Channel.
Oh, so it's an American ship?
No, it was Canadian.
Oh, Canadian. Leave it to the Canadians to build a bad luck ship.
Yes, well, the Amazon was Canadian. As the American, as the Mary Celeste, it was an American ship.
Ah, okay. Built on the skeleton of a Canadian ship, got it.
Retrofitted and upgraded and everything, yes. So Parker was in charge for 2 years. He did what they called the West Indies trade. Nothing unusual happened, changed hands a couple times, nothing interesting there. In October of 1867, it was driven ashore in a storm and abandoned as a wreck. It changed hands a few times. In December of 1868, it was registered as the Mary Celeste. And then it had uneventful and unrecorded voyages until November of 1872. Now, on November 7th, that was when Captain Benjamin Spooner Briggs, his wife, their two-year-old daughter, and their crew of seven men set sail from New York to Genoa, Italy.
I see. And what were they doing exactly? I mean, I assume that it was a merchant vessel at that time.
It was a cargo ship. They were hauling 1,701 bottles of denatured alcohol.
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah.
Gotta have that extra one.
I know, that to me was just the weird part. It's not 1,701. But denatured alcohol is alcohol that is poisonous. It has been had toxins and stuff added to it, so you cannot drink it.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. Benjamin Briggs himself was also a teetotaler and relatively religious, so he would not have wanted drinking alcohol on board.
I see.
And so according to their logbook, the first 3 weeks had like pretty bad weather, so they had to keep everything closed up tight and sealed off, not letting fresh air in or able to air out the cabin, which is really gross, and especially in this case could have been part of what led to their disappearances.
Oh, okay. So when were they discovered?
Well, the boat was found floating on December 5th. The last log entry was on November 25th. So that was just floating around for about 10 days before it was discovered.
And where exactly was it discovered, and by whom?
It was found by Captain David Morehouse, the captain of the De Grazia, which is also bound for Genoa from New York, but it had started about a week behind the Mary Celeste.
I see.
The ship was found at 38 degrees and 20 minutes north latitude, 17 degrees 15 minutes west longitude, and that places it about midway between the Azores and the coast of Portugal. At about 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 4th, 1872, land time.
I see. So it was already pretty close to Europe at that time then.
Mm-hmm. It drifted some 400 miles or so from where the last log note was written.
It is kind of interesting that they came across it, because it means that it probably followed along its route and really didn't deviate were heading the same way.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff that I didn't look into too deeply about the currents and tracking water currents and temperatures and air and everything that goes back pretty far that they still have really good records on. So that's actually super interesting stuff if you're really into that. I was not so much, and trying to read it was way over my head.
I see. All right, so the captain of the De Grazia, they come upon this ship, and what's his response?
He sees it sailing odd. I think it was listing to one side, so he called out to see if there was anybody there. No response. Sent over a lifeboat with some of his men to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the ship in sailable condition. All the rigging was, according to Wikipedia, the sails were partly set and in poor condition. Didn't go into specifics as to what that meant. Some are missing, and I'm not sure what some was. Rigging, sails. Obviously, the rigging was damaged, and some of the ropes were hanging loosely over the side, so it was disheveled but seaworthy. One pump was found disassembled on the deck, possibly being rebuilt, cleaned, or fixed. A previous cargo had included coal, and that can make a lot of dust, which can clog the pump, and had also recently undergone construction, so sawdust was also possibly in the pump.
Okay.
It was found to have 3.5 feet of water on board, which is a somewhat significant amount, but not an alarming amount for certainly a ship of that size to have.
Yeah.
There's 6 months of food and water on board. Fore and lazarette hatches were open, and the covers were beside them on the deck. The lifeboat was missing. There was a makeshift sounding device found on deck, and a sounding device is what is used to measure how much water is in the hold. Mm-hmm. For people who didn't know boating terms like me, I didn't know that. So they don't know what the actual sounding device was, but they found a makeshift one. And what they would do is they would tie like a heavy object to a rope and then coat the whole thing in ash or something.
Yeah.
And then drop it down and then see how much ash had gotten washed off. So I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I had no idea how those things worked. And the lifeboat was missing. The interiors were wet and untidy from water entering the doorways and skylights, which seems to have been left open on purpose, but otherwise it was in reasonable order.
So they observed all this, and what did they do next?
Well, the captain decided that because they have salvage rights, which is why if you find a ship at sea, you get money for bringing it back mm-hmm. to harbor. So he decided that they would split up the two crew into two boats and sail it back to harbor.
I see. That's not exactly easy to do, because a brigantine is not by any stretch of the imagination a small ship, so it requires at least seven.
Well, they had three.
Wow.
Yeah, there were three people sailing that ship, and he had five on his ship with him. So it was definitely a hard going for everybody involved. Luckily for the two ships, unlike the previous part of the journey, it was relatively calm weather, but that was still hard going for them to sail all that much. It was 600 nautical miles, which is 1,100 kilometers, or 660 miles, so they had to sail these two ships, which only had like half of the crew they normally did. The De Grazia arrived in Gibraltar on December 12th, and the Mary Celeste arrived on the 13th.
I see. So when they arrive, I assume they go through the salvage hearings, and that's so that someone or a panel of people can determine the salvage value and then award the salvage rights and payments.
Yeah.
So who was in charge of that?
First in charge of salvage hearing was a dude by the name of Frederick Solly Flood, the Attorney General of Gibraltar, who's also the Advocate General and Proctor for the Queen in her Office of Admiralty. He has not been described in nice terms by pretty much anywhere that I read.
I see. Well, I can imagine that anyone who has that kind of authority will never be described in a nice light.
Yeah. Sounds like he ended up with that job because had much more skill, but ended up with just that for personality. His personality, it sounds like it was not great. He was absolutely convinced that the crew of the De Grazia had something to do with the disappearance of the crew of the Mary Celeste.
I see. And what's the popular opinion of the time?
There seems to have been wildly varying theories as to what may have happened.
I see. So usually those panels are made up of, like, naval captains or other sea captains of merit. So I assume that when they did their investigation, they all had their own theories or debunked each other's theories.
They only really talked about floods that I could find online, because he was the one running the hearing. I wasn't really able to find theories of other people other than the debunking of his main theory, which was that he seemed to have two. He either thought that the De Grazia was involved or that there was a mutiny on the ship.
Okay.
But given that nothing was touched, that seems unlikely.
I see.
Like, there was no damage to the ship itself from any violence or battles or blood or anything like that on the ship.
And if they abandoned ship, why would there still be,
food
and water,
belongings,
for, yeah, all that stuff?
I mean, like, they even left their, like, pipes and stuff.
I see.
So they appeared to have abandoned ship or evacuated the ship in an orderly but very but relatively quick fashion.
Okay. So what did the captain of the De Grazia end up getting for the salvage payments?
He and his crew split between all of them either 1/6 or 1/5 of the reward money, like the, what the Mary Celeste was valued at.
I see. That's pretty low.
Yeah. Especially for how hard it was for them to bring it in. That was a lot of work that they did and got not much for it. Plus, they all had a little bit of a tarnished reputation afterwards because of the salvage hearings and the accusations thrown at them for being involved in murder or other nefarious conduct.
I see. So, I imagine these days there's a lot of, you know, ideas as to what happened floating around.
Yep.
What are the popular ones?
Well, aliens is always thrown out as an option. Oh, I'm not sure why they would have taken the lifeboat in addition to all the people.
Sure.
That seems a bit odd. Or sea monsters, but the ship was in pretty good condition and sailable with no signs of attack of any kind on it. Mm-hmm. So sea monsters seems unlikely. Plus, if there's a sea monster attack, who's going to go on board, you know, above deck?
Uh-huh.
So to me, those two are just kind of gone right away.
Are those really popular opinion?
I mean, I kind of hopefully doubt it. Just because they're so unrealistic.
Okay, so what are the more realistic opinions?
And one that was put forward was there's a mutiny on the ship, and that the crew decided to murder the captain and his wife because he was a religious zealot teetotaler, which isn't necessarily true. He was religious and he was a teetotaler, but there's no sign that he was zealot.
Zealot.
There's no sign that he was a zealot or zealous about preaching religion. Plus, all the crew members' stuff was still on the ship, so it wouldn't make sense for them to leave and not take their stuff.
Okay.
Another is that the crew teamed up with the De Grazia to have the De Grazia taken in for salvage and then split the reward money, which doesn't make sense because Captain Briggs was a part owner of the ship and stood to gain way more money bringing it safely to harbor and delivering the cargo than he would in a salvage hearing.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, that ship plus the cargo it was carrying probably wouldn't have been valued all that high anyway.
Yeah, so that's a theory that was put forward at the time that I don't see any merit in either.
Okay.
Plus, there's no evidence that the two captains knew one another previously. There were reports that came out decades after the salvage hearings in which the Captain Morehouse's widow claimed that he and Captain Briggs were friends, but those weren't made at the salvage hearing, so it's unlikely that the two men actually knew each other.
Okay. And are there any opinions that you are leaning more toward?
Yes. I'm leaning towards one that takes into account the fact that of the denatured alcohol, there were, I think, 6 barrels that were found empty. Not, like, drunk or broken into, but just evaporated out. And those barrels had been made of a different type of wood than the barrels for all the rest of the alcohol. And that type of wood, though I think it was redwood, was very porous. So it was much more likely for something to be able to evaporate from there. So the evaporation of the alcohol could have led to a lot of funk smell, especially with such bad weather they were unable to air out the boat.
I guess that would explain why they had the cargo holds open.
Yeah, that day was one of the first days they hadn't had bad weather in like 3 straight weeks. And that was noted in their log that the weather was nicer.
Yeah.
So it's very possible they had opened up for airing it out. And they might even have decided to get onto the lifeboat for a little bit and just tie it onto the ship and just float back to let it all sort of air out and just get away from the...
From the possibility of it like exploding.
Yeah.
And
I'll link the article. There's a really neat article where a couple of people did a test where you could actually have like a minor explosion that would leave zero trace. No trace at all of any explosion. They tested it for this ship specifically. So it could have been a small explosion that might have prompted them to be like, you know, we're just going to hang out in a lifeboat tied to the ship and just let stuff like air out, not blow up. But because they had, like as we read earlier, some of the rigging was not in good shape, that the rope untied itself or broke or something. And so the ship just sailed away, leaving them in the lifeboat, watching the ship disappear, which is absolutely horrifying to imagine.
Certainly.
Also missing from the ship were several of the navigational tools. I think the sextant, the the fuck is it called?
Chronometer?
Yeah, that. And some of the maps. So they, for whatever reason, took those with them, it appears. And I'm not sure how they know, but they have stated, I've read in multiple places that they had a faulty chronometer. And so they thought they were a lot closer to the Azores, about 6 miles away. And they're probably closer to 120 miles away from the islands. To me, that kind of doesn't make sense. If something is 6 miles away in the ocean, you can see it.
Yeah.
Because we're in Monterey, like in Santa Cruz. So we could see Monterey Bay, and that was that Monterey Bay is 25 miles wide. And you couldn't always see it because it'd be foggy as heck there, but you could frequently see it. Something 6 miles away, I imagine you'd be able to see very clearly, especially something as big as an island.
Certainly.
So them thinking that they're 6 miles away, and one theory is like, oh, well, we're only 6 miles away, we'll just get in a lifeboat and sail there because the ship is unsailable because they misjudged the amount of water in the hold. Like, unless the ship is actively going down, it seems like you'd be a lot safer staying on a ship.
Well, to be fair, not everybody who makes these theories is an experienced seaman.
Indeed. That is a theory, though. Someone put it out there. And if your ship is actually going down, then yes, you might want to leave ship. But I would want to wait until the ship is, like, sinking. So to me, the theory of them getting onto the lifeboat to let the ship air out, possibly after a small explosion and just a lot of bad smell, and then the rope breaking, makes the most sense.
Sure.
That's my theory. Are you?
That's the one I'm leaning towards as well, because that's common practice.
Yeah. So. Especially the captain would want to be very careful because he has his wife and their young daughter on ship, so he'd probably be even more careful about if leaving ship, but also wanting to keep them safe and away from really bad smells.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about the smell.
Well, no, the fumes from denatured alcohol can be hazardous to your health.
Sure.
So.
I mean, probably the least of his concern compared to an explosion on the ship.
Yeah. True. Very true. The other ship we were going to talk about is another ghost ship called the Orang Medan.
I remember hearing a little bit about this story.
So, apparently the Silver Star American vessel was nearby, and they responded to a report of a creepy transmission. Read a couple slight variations of the transmission. But basically it is, we float. This was submitted by Morse code.
Okay.
We float. All officers, including the captain, dead in the chart room and on the bridge. Probably a whole of crew dead. A few confused dots and dashes of Morse code, and so not clear. And then two words later, they were, I die. Okay. Which is really creepy. So they're able to figure out where it was, and then the Silver Star sailed over to the ship and went to go try and help. Because, you know, distress call. So after several hours, the Silver Star found the ship, and they sent a crew, you know, a small manned lifeboat over to go investigate. And apparently what they found was the entire crew of, I think, 22 people was dead. They were contorted in pugilistic forms, like they were trying to fight something off.
Mm-hmm.
Their faces all had expressions of terror, and there were no markings on their bodies, like a physical damage. There's also no sign of poison, and they couldn't figure out what had killed them.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they're, you know, seamen, not doctors.
Not doctors, so. That was the report. They didn't know what killed them. And to my first thought, that was my same thought.
Yeah, that's
true. No damage. Like, did they investigate? They check all the bodies? Did they do full, you know...
Full autopsies
on every corpse they found?
Yeah, so there's no readily observable cause of death, so.
Yeah, and everybody appeared to have frozen in a form of horror, including the dogs, were found with their lips peeled back in snarls.
I see.
It was supposedly hot, over 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 37 degrees Celsius, but some parts of the ship were incredibly cold, 40 degrees Fahrenheit or 4 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
So that's odd. The bodies also appeared to already be decomposing, and we're talking about a few hours, which seems really, really fast to start decomposing that rapidly.
I mean, the transmission said that the crew was dead, but was the person in the radio room also decomposing?
I didn't see any specifics about what bodies are doing what, but just it said the bodies are decomposing, not some bodies.
Gotcha.
They made the reports made it sound as though all the bodies were experiencing levels of decomposition that would be unexpected to happen that rapidly.
Well, they're saying what they observed. Who knows the science behind.
True.
You know.
Well, we do now. And I have the knowledge of it, but the seamen back then, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, they're just saying what they saw, so it's all well and good.
Mm-hmm. So despite all this, the captain of the Silver Star decided to tow the ship for salvage rights, as we just talked a little bit about in the very last. But none of the men were willing to crew it, so he's just going to tow it, apparently. Just tie it onto his ship and pull it, I guess.
Yeah.
Which seems really dangerous and really difficult.
Not especially. You know, people tow boats all the time. Look at a tugboat. What's it do?
Yeah, but I mean, that's its job.
Yeah. It's not that difficult.
Oh, okay. Well, to me, that just seemed very odd. But, okay, I will take your word for it. You know way more about that stuff than I do. But then all of a sudden, the Orang Medan began smoking. So they cut the rope. The Orang Medan exploded and sank very fast. So there was no proof of any of it. They couldn't tow anything in, and obviously all the bodies and everything on it was lost to sea.
I see. So a mysterious transmission, a bunch of scared dead bodies, and then it sinks.
That were decomposing and also still in rigor mortis.
Well, but they must have found the wreck, right? You know, you go and you find a ship.
No.
You put it in the... I see. They didn't record where they found it.
Nope. They also... I'm not sure. It either happened in 1939, 1940, or 1948, or possibly other years. There's no record of a ship called the Orang Medan anywhere in any shipping records, which is very unusual.
Well, not especially. You know, shipping records are only there you know, to show things that people want to see. For example, if you're smuggling, you could definitely change the name of the ship after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Very true, but there's usually still a record of some ship being in some port somewhere.
True.
And if you're sending an SOS saying, I need help, you're not necessarily likely to lie about the name of your ship.
Well, if the ship on, like, the side of it says Aran Medan, which, you know.
Which it did.
Yeah, which could be the smuggler's ship. Yeah, you want them to be able to identify the ship. You know?
But yeah, there's no evidence anywhere that I could find that it actually ever even existed.
I see. Well, who was the captain of the Silver Star?
Didn't really list that.
What didn't really list that?
Anywhere I could find. The Silver Star existed, but it didn't actually exist under that name when this ship was supposedly found.
Supposedly found in the span of 7 years or something like that.
Yep. So that ship was built and working, but it wasn't called the Silver Star. It was called something else.
I see. I mean...
And all this is one done was recorded by, like, a singular unnamed merchant marine.
Gotcha. So, seamen telling tall tales.
Yep. So it was it's definitely a spooky story when you read about it, but I don't think it actually existed as a ship. Some of the theories are for what could have caused all these people to die like that. It would be potentially a potassium cyanide, like that it was transporting cargo that was very dangerous. That could have leaked, causing deaths, but then why wouldn't it have killed the rescue crew? That stuff kills you very quickly.
Yeah, also, unless it was all evaporated out.
Not as likely in spending a few hours when they're searching the ship. On deck, I could understand that it wouldn't necessarily kill them, but when they're searching the ship, it's not going to evaporate that fast. And then they're also carrying nitroglycerin, the second part of this illegal shipment. And the tall order got into it, and boom. So it's like, well, okay, that's possible, but it's unlikely that both of those scenarios happened simultaneously.
Well, yeah, who knows?
So it's a neat, spooky story, but I don't believe it.
Yeah, I'm sure people would have gone searching for the wreck, too.
And the reports would have been made when they got landed, that there would have been reports, because the transmission was supposedly recorded by other, like, naval stations, that then sent out saying, hey, any ships near this area, there's an SOS.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing, too, is when you're giving out an SOS, you're giving out your location, so people know where to look for you. Yeah. And if they don't have a location reported anywhere, then, chances are probably didn't exist.
Yep, but it's still a cool story. So, since we also talk about cats, I decided to talk about some of the cats that were famous for being on ships.
I see. Who would bring a cat on a ship?
A lot of people. We talked about it a little bit in our Black Cats episode, that it was black cats are frequently kept by fishermen's wives as good luck.
That's true.
And also, cats are very useful. One, they're good for morale, because they just offer moral support and company to sailors. They're also really good at pest control. So,
which was a major issue
in
shipping for a long time.
Well, it still is. Plus, also not just, like, what I thought it makes sense is for grain and the food stores, but also to keep them from chewing on things like the rigging, ropes, leather.
Mm-hmm.
Other stuff that totally makes sense that I didn't even think about. So a lot of ships had cats on them. And the few that I picked a couple, one of them is Chibli. And Chibli was a ship's cat aboard the tall ship Baroque Picton Castle. She was rescued from an animal shelter and circumnavigated the world 5 times. Picton Castle's role as a training ship resulted in Chibli being introduced to a large number of visitors and becoming a celebrity in her own right. Chibli died on November 10th, 2011 in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. She had sailed over 180,000 miles at sea.
Dang.
Circumnavigated the world 5 times. That's huge.
A well-traveled cat.
It is. And Rinda. Rinda was the ship's cat on the Norwegian cargo ship Rinda, which torpedoed and sunk during World War II. When the surviving crew realized that their beloved ship's cat was not on board the lifeboat, they rowed around the night until they finally heard a pitiful meow in the distance. We rowed as hard as we could, and we laughed and cried when we lifted the sobbing boat firm all aboard. The cat became the ship's cat aboard the rescue ship, the British armed naval trawler HMT Picked, and was given the name Rinda after the previous ship. So I just thought that was really cute. This crew was like, where's our cat? And they found her.
Yep.
So all the stories I have here are happy ones, because we want to end this on a happy note.
Sure, sure.
Unsinkable Sam, previously named Oscar, he was a ship's cat of the German battleship Bismarck. When she was sunk on 27th of May 1941, only 116 out of a crew of over 2,200 survived. Oscar was picked up by the destroyer HMS Cossack, one of the ships responsible for destroying the Bismarck. Cossack herself was repeated and sunk a few months later, killing 159 of her crew, but Oscar again survived to be rescued and was taken to Gibraltar, where the salvage hearings were, for the Mary Celeste. He became the ship's cat of the HMS Ark Royal, which was torpedoed and sunk in November that year. Oscar was again rescued, but it was decided that this time to transfer him to a home on land. And now he was known as the Unsinkable Sam. After, you know, starting 3 sinkings, He was given short duty as the mouse catcher in the office buildings to the governor of Gibraltar because he still had six lives to go. He's sent to take the UK and spend the rest of his life at the Home for Sailors. A portrait of him exists in the private collection of the National Maritime Museum in Greenville.
Wow, he was a part of some serious battles from World War II.
Seriously, man. Three ships. He survived three sinkings.
Yep. Dang.
That is a lucky-ass catch.
That or he's just really bad luck for everyone else.
But lucky for him. Yeah. Because he survived. Yeah, that is very true. So those are the three that I grabbed. I'll link a couple articles because I was reading about people trying to travel with cats nowadays on ships. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's in some ways easier than dogs, in some ways harder, because you have to have like fewer travel restrictions and it's a lot easier to lock up your cat on a boat. But if you're sitting in a dock somewhere, you have to be way more careful because it's a lot easier for a cat to get out and go somewhere. And just like hop onto your neighbor's boat and then they take off and they're like, we have a cat.
And you're like, where's my cat?
Like, where's my cat? So there are a lot of people nowadays that travel with felines on ships, and they say that you do have to be careful, and also especially watch out for them chasing rigging. Like, oh, that makes sense.
As they undo the rigging, and
the next rigging, thing you know, it's
ships drifting off to sea.
Or they're just trying to chase it, and then all sorts of bad things could possibly happen.
Yep.
One of the things they said to do is make sure your cat knows how to get out of the water if it gets in. Have a friend, maybe, take your cat, like, and put it in the water, so then they can practice climbing up out of the water. Also have a rope with a weight tied to it, so if they fall in, you can throw the rope over, and it won't just float away from them or float up too high for them to get to.
Makes sense.
Yep, but yeah, so those were our ghost ships and cats on ships. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, if you ever hear about a cat named Unsinkable Anything, don't allow it on your boat.
Yeah, probably. So I will link all the sources I use, but I wanted to give a quick shout-out to two podcasts. This Paranormal Life and Morbid Curiosity, both of whom have really good episodes on the Mary Celeste and who I listen to and were part of what inspired me to do this, as well as, of course, you know, my beloved partner, Chris. But those were two really good podcasts on this. And anyway, thank you very much for listening. Please reach out. We'd love to hear if you have any theories or what you think of any of the stuff that could have happened on the Mary Celeste or the Roaring Madan. mmandmeows@gmail.com or on any of the social medias. And we will get another episode out for you as soon as we can. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. All right, bye.
Bye.